Welcome to an early release of Series 15 of York Hospital Ball. Kicking us off is the wonderful Kingsley James, the right-hand man to Sir John Askey, whose partnership masterminded York City's promotion back in 2022. Kingsley's playing career saw him face the Minster Men on numerous occasions, but when he hung up his boots at just 29 years of age, he moved into coaching full-time. City were huge beneficiaries of that decision, as he worked alongside John during that memorable promotion campaign. Sadly, promotion was followed by a difficult spell under new ownership at the club, and in this interview, Kingsley lifts the lid on that challenging period, which ultimately led to his departure. This episode is sponsored by Radcliffe and Son Plastering, who offer a quality service at a reasonable price. The local company can be found via their Facebook page on Check a Trade or by phone on 07599 402 342. 07599 402 342. And if that hasn't convinced you, Sam Radcliffe is also a huge York City supporter. But for now, please enjoy the refreshingly honest thoughts and insights of Kingsley James.
So Kingsley, thank you so much for giving up your time and also for coming here to York Hospital Radio Studios. It's always a delight to have people here and meet people face to face. So loads to talk about with York City, as you'd expect on this podcast. But I wanted to touch upon your playing career, particularly the start of it. You know, you started your career with Sheffield United, and I think I'd read that you'd been with them since the age of 10, captain of a youth team, and that youth team had people like Kyle Walker in it. So that must have been a fantastic grounding for you.
Yeah, I signed when I was 9. I was there for 10 years, so yeah, big portion of my childhood was spent travelling to Sheffield and back, which was difficult, but unbelievable experience. And like you said, getting to play with players like Kyle and Harry was a great experience, great grounding for me. I had some really good coaches that taught me a lot about life, not just football. One of them was Mick Tarmey, who was from Barnsley, such a great guy. Taught me so many things about discipline and all of those things, not just, you know, tactics and how to play football. And then Mark Smith, who was reserve coach, he really prepared all the young players for men's football, more so than just academy football, you know, the kind of football that if we were going on loan, we'd have to understand how to play. So yeah, it was a great start.
Yeah, and being captain as well, you know, you mentioned that Harry Maguire, Kyle Walker, who've gone on and been captains for massive clubs, so how did you get the captaincy ahead of them? Were you always kind of a leader growing through the year groups?
I'd like to think so. I think I tried to lead by example. Hard work was the biggest part of my game from start to finish, really. I always tried to be the fittest in the team and run more than anyone in the team. So I'd like to think that they chose me to be captain for that, so people would follow, obviously, what I was doing on the pitch. And then as I got older, I think I was a leader off the pitch as well, demanding standards and those types of things. I always tried to give everything in every training session and every game. So I think that was the big factor in being captain.
And you played one first team game, I think, for Sheffield United in the League Cup, yeah, at Hartlepool. I mean, I guess that's the dream, isn't it, for all those players that come through that academy? It's to pull on that first team shirt, isn't it? And not everyone will have a chance to do that. So that must have been a proud moment for you, a proud moment for your family.
Yeah, I was on the bench the year before Ipswich were last game of the season. They gave me and a couple of the lads experience of going and travelling down and being on the bench for the first team, which, you know, going into the changing room and seeing your shirt up with your name on and those types of things. My brother's got that framed in his house still with his ticket. You know, he was a massive supporter. He used to take me all the time. Sometimes he had to take me on his superbike to games. So yeah, it was unbelievable for me and for them to, you know, see the hard work that they had put in as well, not just me, that had been worthwhile and got me an opportunity like that.
And Mickey Adams, he released you at Sheffield United, but then took you to Port Vale with him at his next club then. So that was obviously a bit of a strange situation, I suppose. And what sort of manager was he like then? Because I sort of read he was quite old school, quite big into fitness, which I imagine, yeah, given what you said there, probably suited your game, really.
Yeah, yeah. So Mickey released me at the end of the season, which was a little bit confusing because I'd already spoken to numerous people at the club that had basically said I would get in another season. So I got into a meeting at the end of the season and he told me I was being released, which obviously was a surprise. But I went on trial up at Inverness. I went to train at Inverness for a week. And when Mickey let me go, he said, you know, there might be another opportunity for you elsewhere. And then he called me a couple of weeks after I'd finished my trial at Inverness and offered me a contract at Port Vale, which, again, I was a little bit confused by. But for me, I just felt that I was going to sign at a League Two football club and hopefully I was going to get an opportunity to play and establish myself at that level, which I needed. I needed to start playing games, even though I was still young.
But a bit closer than Inverness as well.
A little bit closer than Inverness, yeah. It took us 8 hours to get up there. Me and a few of the lads from Sheffield United drove up from Sheffield. It took us 8 hours. But I did have potential opportunity to stay at Sheffield United. So he did the same with quite a few of us. Two of us ended up signing at Port Vale, me and Phil Rowe, and then a couple of the lads ended up going back to Sheffield United on like a six-month deal, basically to show the new manager coming in what they could do. But I don't regret anything that I've done in my career. So it was something that helped me build a lot of resilience and mental strength, especially going through Mickey's pre-seasons, because they were the most brutal pre-seasons you could imagine. We'd do double sessions pretty much every day for a couple of weeks. Start a pre-season, we'd run all the time, and it was hard. It basically challenged everybody in the squad mentally to see who we could break. And if you give up, then it was almost like I can't trust you. So he just wanted to test who would keep going even when it was horrible and they had nothing left. And as long as he kept going, he wasn't looking for who finished first in every run. He was looking for people who just kept going and who had the mental fortitude to keep going when it was horrible. So again, that taught me something as a young player, seeing that, because I'd done hard pre-seasons before that, but nothing like Mickey's.
And I suppose it must have worked, because I think you ended up getting promoted with Port Vale, didn't you?
Yeah, so the second year, we had a really good squad, really good team. Start of the season, I think we were in administration still. It was like a crazy period, but we had a great changing room. Like the lads who were there were brilliant, great group of lads. Mentally, so robust. I think we used to beat a lot of teams before we'd even started in the tunnel. So yeah, we went on a really good run. Tom Pope was the best he's ever been. He was unbelievable and took us to promotion. Unfortunately, I didn't play as many games as I'd have liked to. I got in the team and had a little period, and then I ended up out on loan at Hereford for the remainder of the season, which we were pushing for the playoffs at Hereford at that time in the National League. So great experience to go out and continue playing first team football.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention Hereford actually, because you played under Martin Foyle, who was obviously really well known to York City fans. And what was it like playing for Martin?
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. I went down there from, I think it was maybe January time till the end of the season. Great experience for me. Him and Ports. Ports was very different to Foyley. Foyley was really nice guy. Really nice guy. Ports wasn't so nice, but I really respected Ports because he just was himself and he was who he was. He didn't try and shy away from that and, you know, pretend he was somebody else. And
so were they sort of good cop, bad cop?
Good cop, bad cop. Yeah. Absolutely. And Ports didn't mind being bad cop at all. So it was a great experience going down there. Like I said, we were pushing for playoffs. I had some really good players in the team. We had Sam Klukas, Marley Watkins, Ryan Bowman. So we had a really good squad and probably should have done better than what we did and got in the playoffs, really. We ended up dropping points towards the end of the season. We helped Mansfield win the league as well.
Yeah. And I wanted to touch upon as well your career with England C, which I think you had 4 caps for them. I just wonder what that experience was like, because I've kind of heard that they treat it like full internationals. You get the track suit, you get the caps, you get treated as if you were, you know, playing for the England men's first team. So what was that like for you? And I think you scored on your debut against Estonia as well.
Yeah, I scored at the Shea on my debut. I got a goal and assist in that game. Great experience. We had to go and stay in the hotel, even though it was in Halifax. We weren't allowed to stay with our families. We had to go and stay in the hotel, train, go back, eat properly, live properly. It was an incredible experience when you were there. And we ended up over in Cyprus, I think, for one of our games, Estonia, Republic of Ireland. So you got to travel. Yeah. You had to travel in your suits. Everything was done properly.
And it must have been incredible, like, travelling to those countries with the Three Lions on your tracksuit as well. Yeah. Must be sort of goosebumps stuff, I suppose, when you get those experiences.
Yeah, and even though it's not the actual England team, you still have great pride in representing your country and hopefully showing that you're one of the best players outside the Football League, you know, in your country. And yeah, for me, singing the national anthem and going through that whole process before the game was really special, and especially the first game, all my family and my wife being able to come and watch me, which she never really did because she had no interest in football, but she was very different for the England game than she was all the other club games.
Talking of the Shay, you had a great spell at Halifax, didn't you, when you signed for them? 11 goals across the season, including a memorable one against Wrexham, but relegated on the final day, but then won at Wembley the week after, which was even more memorable because I think you got married the day before.
Oh, yeah.
So that must be probably the most memorable season of your career, I guess.
Yeah, unfortunately, we did get relegated. The start of the season was chaotic, to say the least. Two managers came and went, so we had Neil Aspin to start the season. He left quite early on, and then we had Darren Kelly came in, and it just didn't work. And then Jim Harvey, who was assistant, took over, and we just went on an unbelievable run and should have stayed up. You know, the squad that we finished with should never have been relegated because we had a team full of really good players, including Matty Brown, who obviously was captain at York.
Yeah, yeah.
So we had a really good squad. And then last day of the season, hit the crossbar, did everything that, you know, we needed to do, but just didn't get the next goal that we needed really to stay up. But it was devastating. But then obviously we had the Wembley game to hopefully go out on a high for that season.
So how did you go about booking your wedding then? Was that booked well in advance?
That was booked well in advance, and obviously prior to that point, I don't think the FA Trophy was played after the season had finished. It was usually played before the season had finished. So I booked the wedding thinking, even if we make the final, it's not going to be then. Then the dates came out, and it was obviously following the season. And then it was a case of, well, there's a long way to go to get to that point. So
the semi-final must have been interesting for your wife watching.
So every game it was like, no, we'll be all right. We're miles away from the final. And then we got to the quarterfinals, and we played Gateshead away. I scored the equaliser in that game, but we ended up, I think, equalising right at the death to take it to extra time, and then won on penalties. Matty Brown scored an unbelievable pen. If you can get it up on YouTube and watch it, Gateshead against Halifax FA Trophy quarters, runs up and puts it right in the top corner to win. I think after that game we had Nantwich in the semi-finals, and that's when it almost felt like, actually, this could happen.
50,000 people at Wembley, which must have been an incredible experience to play in front of, and I think 30 of those 50,000 were from your wedding party, weren't they? Is that right?
Well, I had to fly down on the morning, so I flew down on the morning and got a taxi to the hotel from the airport, and then all the minibuses came down from the wedding to watch. Unfortunately, I was told on the morning of the game that I wouldn't be starting, which was obviously disappointing to hear, considering I'd played every game during that season. But being able to play any part in it was an amazing experience.
Is that because you got married? Is that why you were?
I'm not too sure as to what the reasons were. I did speak to the club about leaving prior to the trophy final because I wanted to continue playing in the National League or as high as I possibly could. So I don't know what the reasonings were. Maybe it was because I got married the day before, but I got told on the morning rather than on the day of my wedding, which would probably be, you know, it probably would have been a better way to do it in my opinion, so I could enjoy my wedding a little bit more than what I did. But nevertheless, it was an amazing experience for everybody who were involved. You know, the kit man Ellie, who was unbelievable kit man, and then he had an amazing day, you know, celebrating. He was running up and down, he had his top off with a flag, sprinting up and down to all the fans. It was amazing to see people like that have such a great time on such a big occasion.
And you returned to Wembley a year later, didn't you, playing against York, who'd kind of done the same as Halifax, got relegated a couple of weeks before. I wonder what your memories were of that game, because it was quite a crazy sort of end-to-end game, wasn't it? That's my recollection of it. So I wonder what it was like from the opposition.
That was for me, obviously a different experience, because I got down there knowing that I was going to be playing. Again, my wife weren't too happy because it fell on our anniversary, so we spent our anniversary down in London. Macclesfield were amazing. They made sure we had a hotel after, and all the wives could come and stay at the hotel with us after. They, you know, sorted a bar out and everything for us to spend time with his family after the game, and then we ended up going out in Camden, which was amazing. But the game itself was, I personally playing in it felt like it was an unbelievable game. If you were somebody who was watching, it was a great game to watch. I felt that we deserved to win. I thought we'd done enough to win, but it was almost like, for me, it didn't matter whether we won or lost. You know, we were playing at Wembley in front of all those people, and I'd got a winner's medal the year before. It was gutting not to win, because like I said, I thought we deserved to win it. But I almost felt that it was a good thing for some of the players at York as well, because they'd obviously experienced what we'd experienced at Halifax, which is the lowest of the low, and then at least the season had some kind of positive impact on the players at the end and some of the fans. There was something good to, you know, to cheer about.
Back on, I suppose, yeah, as well.
So it was a little bit bittersweet, but it was good for them, and good, like Hamza, who I played with at Halifax, you know, he's got to experience it 2 years in a row, and he's obviously gutted that York have gone down, but he's got the experience of winning at Wembley again, which was great for him. And he cleared my volley off the line, which he should never have been there, and he should never have flicked it off the line. It should have been me running off celebrating at Wembley and not Hamza celebrating a goal line clearance. But it was a great experience again, and like I said, it was a special occasion for everyone involved, but obviously for York and the players, they were all gutted but happy the way it finished.
Yeah, and I suppose some Premier League players will go through their whole career and not play at Wembley, won't they? And you know, for you to have played twice in 2 years is pretty impressive. I'm sure your wife will have been happy that you didn't get there the year after, so you could at least celebrate your honeymoon. I think that was your last game for Macclesfield, and you moved on to Chester, who you'd played for before. And we're saying before we started recording that it was John McCarthy was there, who was obviously a York City legend. Yeah. So what was it like working with John?
It was great. I'd already been there with John at Chester under Steve Burr when he was manager. So John was assistant manager when I went the first time round, and I absolutely loved my first year at Chester. It was a great year. We had a good cup run, did really well. I think we were just a few players short of doing really well that season. So it was great to go back. Unfortunately, it didn't work out the way that John hoped it would, or I hoped it would. It ended up being a poor season for everybody involved, and the club took a different path. So it was disappointing the way it ended, but I loved my time at Chester, and the fans were superb, especially that first year was an unbelievable experience, playing so many games and doing as well as we had, when realistically the club should have been in the Conference North, as they'd been relegated the year before and got the reprieve.
Yeah, and I think John, from my memories of when I interviewed him, that there was a lot of financial constraints then when he was there, and I think you're one of the highest paid players, and they loaned you out to Barrow, who then stayed up at the expense of Chester. Yeah. So that again must have been quite a surreal experience to be part of.
Yeah, it was strange ending, strange experience. So basically, towards the latter end of the season, the club under Marcus Bignett just decided that they wanted to get rid of all the experienced players who, as you said, were top earners. The club offered the contracts. They were the contracts that were being offered by other clubs. It's not like players were just taking loads of money from a club for no reason. They were the contracts that were being offered out by every club that was interested in these players. So these experienced players had just agreed deals to sign at Chester. But the club almost made it the players' faults for the financial problems. They then forced the players out, which is why it ended as badly as what it did. So there was really good professionals who did everything properly and then ended up finding out they were on the transfer list via newspaper articles or fans meetings or whatever the situation was. So then we ended up, John went to Harrogate. I ended up obviously going to Barrow on loan till the end of the season. And players went to different clubs. I think Bully went to Stockport maybe till the end of the season, and it obviously it ended how it ended. The club ended up getting relegated to the Conference North, and we stayed up at Barrow, which wasn't the nicest of experiences. I wished it hadn't have ended like that.
It sounds like you've got a lot of respect for their fans, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
For them fans to be on the
absolutely, and I'd never signed for a football club just for money. That's just not who I am. It wasn't about the money. I had numerous options to go to other clubs. I would have took less money to go to a football league club, which was the situation. Mm-hmm. I was going to take less money to go and play in football league than I was to stay in the National League. It was never about money. It was about going back to the club. But that was the contract that was agreed. I have a lot of respect for the club and the fans. And like I said, I absolutely love my time. But obviously, it ended a lot differently than everyone hoped when I first re-signed and we were getting back underway.
Yeah, and you ended up, I think, playing the following season at Guiseley. One of the goals you scored was against York City, and my recollections were quite exuberant celebrations from yourself. So I wondered what that was all about. Was it just you liked to celebrate, or
I scored two against York that year, home and away for Guiseley. Penalty, obviously, at Bootham, and then I scored. I put one in the roof of the net as well at home. It was just the fans. The fans were obviously jeering as I were running up to take the penalty. So I was just telling them to be quiet. That's just who I were. I was quite an emotional player. I played on emotion all the way through my career, so it was just something and nothing, really. It was nothing against York or the fans whatsoever. If it were any fans, no matter who it was, they would have got the same reaction, really. Yeah,
fair enough. And I think you retired from playing at 29 years old, around sort of COVID time. I didn't know whether that was you were kind of fed up maybe moving from club to club, whether it was the COVID influence, whether it was that I know that you'd coached kind of pretty much all the way through your playing career, yeah. And that was kind of becoming your passion. What were the reasons that you were, because obviously it's a very young age to finish playing, and you're obviously a very fit guy. You probably could have carried on playing until your late 30s, I suppose.
Yeah. So it was probably a combination of a few different things. I'd played at Gainsborough for a year and we were doing really well. And during that COVID period, I think we were in the playoffs, or we were in and around the playoffs and going really well. And then the season obviously got cancelled. Yeah. It was basically game over. And then obviously the COVID situation, the financial impact that I had on the club, they weren't able to offer me anywhere near what kind of contract I had. So then I was just looking where I wanted to play. I just wanted to play football and enjoy it, because I really enjoyed it at Gainsborough. Curtis Woodhouse was the manager in the end, and we were playing great football. It was really enjoyable. So I wanted that to continue. I just wanted to continue enjoying playing football at that point. I'd got my business that was established. You know, I loved coaching, so I just wanted somewhere to go and enjoy playing. And I ended up signing at Hyde under TY and John. So it was excellent. Absolutely loved the training. Training was brilliant. Everything was done properly. So I was really enjoying it. And then again, I think we'd played a few games, and then COVID again basically put everything on pause, and it was almost like a full year out, and I'd spent a full year with my daughter every day because my wife's a nurse, so she had to just continue going to work, and I was at home with my daughter every day. And after that period, I think I really struggled to be away from her as much as I were, and I realised how much time I was spending at work and how little time I was spending at home. So I got about, I think, six games in maybe at Hyde in the next season. And I had a conversation with TY and just said, you know, the way that I'm feeling at the minute, I'm working too much and I'm not spending enough time at home. So if that continues, I'm just gonna retire from playing and just concentrate on my coaching. So that feeling continued. So I just went in and I said to the club, I'm gonna retire from football. They tried to convince me to carry on and to keep playing, but I thought it was unfair on the club. I could have played for the rest of the season and not been fully committed. Yeah. And that's, like I said earlier on, that's not who I am. I didn't want to do that to a football club who were full of great people. So I just went in and said, I'm going to call it a day, and I've not regretted it.
Yeah, which I think is similar to what TY ended up doing as well, didn't he? Sort of, yeah. Maybe a bit further down the line, but, you know, family always definitely comes first, isn't it? You came to York City under John Askey, obviously played for him at Macclesfield, registered as a player, I think, but it was quite clear, I think, from, again, my memories, that you just wanted to coach. But
yeah.
Were you surprised to, well, and pleased to be asked by John then? Because obviously John's an experienced manager. I'm sure he'll have had numerous number twos. Were you buzzing to get that kind of phone call to join him?
Initially, it was, I got a phone call from my old agent who said, you know, I've got something that you might be interested in, to which I replied, if it's anything playing wise, I'm not interested one bit. Doesn't matter who it is, what it is, I don't want to play anymore. And he said, well, John's got the job at York until the end of the season. He's looking for someone to go in and assist. He wants someone who's, you know, younger. I don't want to put you forward unless it's something that you'd like to do. So I spoke to my wife, and even as a player, York was the only club that I would have gone back from part-time to full-time for, and it almost happened that season that you spoke about when I was at Guiseley. And there was a deal in place for me to go to York as a player. So I spoke to my wife and said, you know, there's this opportunity that could be there at York. What do you think? So we had a conversation, and she said, well, if you want to do it, speak to John and see what the situation is. So I spoke to my agent. He said, right, I'll speak to John and see what he says. He spoke to John. John basically said, I'd absolutely love Kingsley to come in and help. I'll give him a call and we'll have a chat. So he gave me a call and I just said, yeah, let's do it.
Was that quite a fast process then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, really quick.
A few days or something.
Yeah, a few days.
And then, I wondered that about sort of coaching players. Was it hard coaching players that were sort of similar age to yourself, or, you know, older than you? I'm thinking like Sir Clayton Donaldson, obviously a lot older than you in terms of playing terms. Is that difficult to do, you know, or is coaching, and doesn't matter what age people are?
Coaching someone like Clayton is not difficult. I don't really need to coach someone like Clayton. Clayton has already been there and done it at an unbelievable level, much higher level than I ever played at. So I didn't really need to coach Clayton. It was more about getting the right information to them as a group, getting them in the right place as a group, being as fit as we possibly could, being as organised as we possibly could. I didn't find it difficult coaching anybody because we had the same beliefs. We had the same beliefs in what we were doing as a group, as staff, which then obviously showed on the pitch and showed, you know, through training and then into games. And I think coaching can be made too complicated. I don't think we had anything that was overly complicated. I think everything that we tried to instill in the players and get across the players was simple. So I didn't find it too difficult coaching. I don't think age is a factor, really. I think it's more about experience and knowing when to step in and when not to step in.
Yeah. I wondered what your first impressions were, sort of you and John, really, when you first went in, because, you know, York City had high expectations going into that season. They'd done really well in pre-season, started off terribly, obviously new stadium as well, lots of kind of expectation that they would go on and get promoted, but like I said, such a poor start. So what did you sort of think when you first went in? What was the mood in the camp? What do you think needed to happen?
I think first and foremost they needed to be fitter, and I think that at most football clubs, I think being as fit as you possibly can as a group of players gives you a massive chance regardless of ability. We had a lot of players with a lot of ability. I think we just needed to be fitter as a group, be more organised, and just mentally in a better place, stronger mentally, more together than they potentially were. And we had to create the right atmosphere through how we played. I think the fans, you know, initially it was difficult. It was a difficult period early on. But I think once the fans started to see what we were putting out on the pitch, and the players were, I'm not saying they weren't giving everything before, but once they saw what we were trying to do and how much fitter we were as a team and more organised, I think we created a much better atmosphere for the club as a whole, the fans, the players. And then obviously once you start winning games, that you build momentum, and that becomes
a
lot easier.
Then, don't you, from the supporters? And when you say there about fitness, were you sort of eyeing up the Mickey Adams type double sessions, or what? How did you make the team fit?
I think training was just harder. Played under John, he never really needed to run us too much. It was just hard. Training was just difficult, which it should be. I don't know what had happened before, so I'm not going to speak about what happened before. But when we came in, we just made training sessions a high intensity, made sure that everything was pretty basic, but high intensity, hard work. And then we added in bits of detail throughout the months. And as we progressed, we needed to build foundations before we could actually start implementing anything else.
So it's almost like training as you would play then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, training was difficult. And I think a lot of the lads found training really difficult. And we did do some difficult runs, but we saw the benefit of that later in the season where, you know, we just ran over teams in later stages of games where teams just couldn't stay with us. Even the full-time clubs, we ended up just, you know, dominating games later on because of that.
And I think before then, from a supporter's point of view, that was always a big sort of debate with part-time teams seemed to be fitter than York City, who were full-time professionals. And it was always really hard for us to sort of get our head around the last 20 minutes of games where you'd expect York City to be able to, you know, dominate. They wouldn't be. I wonder what the dynamics was like with you and John, because John, I've only met once briefly, you know, quite understated, very quiet, or comes across very quiet, and people have said he is like that in the dressing room as well. So I'm not saying it was good cop, bad cop, like you were talking about earlier, but how were you different? How did you complement each other?
I think anyone who knows Johnny, he's quiet, but he's very funny. He's very funny, very dry. And in the changing room, he was just very clear in what he wanted. And, you know, after some performances, he would say to me, I'm just going to leave it to you today. You just go in and deal with this situation how you think it should be dealt with. And he'd just let me go in and, you know, either give him a rocket that was needed at certain times, or we'd just be really clear about this is the situation, this is what's happened in the game, this is what we need to do moving forward, and on we go. And it was the same for John. Some games he would feel like he didn't need to say anything. He would come in and just say, well done, or whatever the situation was. Or even after some poor performances, he'd come in and just say, get changed, see you on Monday. And then other games he would come in and he would give people a dressing down. The situation and the position we were in as a group, I think, determines how you deal with certain aspects, and certain players need different styles of managing and coaching. But I think me and John were just very in sync with what we wanted from a group of players and a group of people. So we never really disagreed on much, and we dealt with everything as a group. You know, all the staff were together, so we would always ask opinions of Mark as the goalkeeping coach, and we would do things as a group. So before we went in and did anything in any situation, we'd already discussed everything and decided on what we were going to do as a group.
And it must have been quite empowering, I suppose, for you as well, that John trusted you to then go in and say, right, you deal with this situation today, you know, as a young coach in a you know, professional team like that. It must have been quite good for you, like a massive boost for you as an individual.
Yeah, it just meant a lot from someone who I respected. You know, as a player, I really enjoyed playing under him, and even more so working with him as, you know, as a coach alongside him. Just to have someone who trusted me and believed in me to go, you go and deal with this situation today. It was an amazing feeling, but just that I'd earned his respect to be able to do that.
And I felt like there was a big weight of expectation around York City. And I think early on in those sort of, those early days with you and John, you know, like Gates said, away, it felt quite toxic amongst the supporter base. Did the players feel that at that time? And is that what you mean about, like, some players need maybe an arm around the shoulders?
It was a difficult period initially, but it should have been, because we weren't achieving what they should have been achieving as a group. So we could understand the frustration, you know, from the fans, from the club itself, because we should have been in a better position. But we knew that it'd take time, but we knew that if we could start picking up results and fans could start seeing performances that, you know, they want to see, that can very quickly change and be used in a completely different way. So going from being toxic to, you know, almost winning games that we shouldn't win, because everybody in the ground is there together. So we knew that would happen initially, but we knew that if we could turn that around and we could start picking up results, that we could use that energy in a completely different way, which we ended up doing.
And I suppose you and John have both had numerous experiences at different clubs to sort of see that happening before, haven't you? Where maybe you've been on a bad run and then one result sort of changed it. Which game do you think turned it around? And I've asked different players this question over the years when I've done the podcast, but I didn't know for you whether it was the comeback against Morpeth or the Dagenham winning on penalties. Filed away seemed a big result. Alfreton at home is what Paddy said. I don't know if that was because he got a winner in that game or what. But
yeah,
but what? Which game do you think you sort of thought, well, that is starting to turn now? This is the fans sort of getting back on side and getting that belief.
I don't think there was any specific game. You're just so focused on what you're trying to do that half the time in the games you're not experiencing the game as everybody else is. You're so focused on what you're doing that everything else that's happening around is just almost like background noise. But I just remember a period where we just kept grinding results out and we just kept picking up 1-0s, and I think we had a period where we won 1-0 consecutively for a while. I just felt as a group we were just starting to get where we needed to be. I can't pick out a game really. The Morpeth game was, for me, that was just like epitomising what we wanted to be as a team, that we would just keep going and going and keep banging on the door as much as we could to win any game of football. And the way it ended obviously was unbelievable. Brownie's knee slide in front of the dugout was amazing. But I think for me the atmosphere felt completely different and special when we played Chorley.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Before we played Chorley, before we'd even got near kickoff in the warm up, it felt like, you know, there were 10,000 people in the ground. There were noise everywhere from warm up and until we'd finished the game. And before the game, the chairman had come in and you know, spoke to the players and spoke to us, a group of staff, and was really emotional. And I think that game felt really special.
And just before we get onto the sort of playoffs, so, you know, there were some setbacks along the way, weren't there? Bradford Park Avenue at home was a strange game, really.
Really strange game.
Three shots and 1-3-0. Yeah. Alfreton away as well. Do you think sort of a dressing room unity then at that point had made a big difference? I feel like previously a result like that would have then been followed by maybe two or three results before they'd have been able to pick back up, whereas that, they were sort of isolated games and then you were able to sort of bounce back quite quickly. You think that was because you'd got the dressing room as you wanted it and everyone sort of together?
I'd say so, yeah. I think the Bradford Park Avenue was just a really weird game. I don't think we really overly reacted to that because we had a lot of control in the game and, you know, conceded a couple of goals on the counter-attack, which can happen. And then Nicky Clee scored an unbelievable goal from the edge of the box, which Clee's, you know, done throughout his career. He's a really good footballer. And games like that happen to any team. So that for us wasn't really a big thing. I think the Alfreton one was a difficult one. You know, there were a few words in the changing room between myself and me and Brownie. Had a bit of a row in the changing room after that game. For us, it was never a big deal. It was just that we were desperate to win and they were desperate to win. You know, Brownie was emotional because he wanted to win a game of football. I was emotional because I was desperate to win. So we never, there was never any ill feelings after that. It was just said and it was done. And we knew that the next game, it would be, we would see a reaction because as a group, that's what we'd developed and that's what we'd created between the staff and the players.
And I suppose with Brownie as well, because you'd played with him before, you probably knew that you could have that sort of conversation with him that's quite fraught,
yeah,
knowing that it's not going to linger, whereas maybe another player you didn't know as well, you might not have been as confident to do that sort of approach with.
Definitely, and I knew that Brownie would always react in that way, but he would also react and go out and do something about it on the training ground, on the pitch, in games, around the place. I knew that he wouldn't be going around and trying to be toxic or anything like that. He's just not like that. He's a great guy. So I knew there would be no impact from that. And he knows me as well, so he knew there was no impact of me and him having a bit of an argument in the changing room. It was always going to end there.
Yeah. And just sort of going back to coaching before we really get into those playoffs, but you know, there was a mixture of experience and young players, people like Jack Mackay, as you know, Sam Sanders, Max Coogan. So was there certain players that you worked with more closely than others, or ones that you tried to sort of impact on their game?
I'd say I spent quite a lot of time with Max. Max always used to come to me and say, you know, will you work with me? Will you help me improve? I spent a lot of time with Akhil, working with Akhil, who from when we started to when we finished, you know, showed unbelievable progression and was just playing to his strengths and doing things that he was really good at. And he was unbelievable. He's probably the best athlete I've ever seen in terms of being able to do everything. Athletically, he was unbelievable, Akhil. Obviously, Max, you know, developed as the season went on and became a massive factor in why we ended up where we ended up. So them two are probably the ones that I spent the most time with working individually. But it was brilliant working with all of them. You know, they all, in the end, we had a group that all had amazing attitudes, worked really hard, and had obviously really good footballing ability. So even when players were out of the team, they were still coming on and impacting the game, like Kurt Willoughby. You know, he was frustrated that he wasn't playing, but every time he came on, he showed an unbelievable attitude and won us some games. And as he spoke about Jack Mackay, he came in and did an unbelievable job for us. Mm. Off the ball, he was unbelievable at pressing. He got us up the pitch by, you know, carrying the ball a lot. So everybody played the part. Sam came in as a young kid and did unbelievable for us, to be fair to him, as a young player coming in on loan. So it was great to work with all ages. And like I said, Clates, I didn't really need to. Need to coach Clates. He's just
legend.
legend, amazing footballer. You know, great guy, and obviously the Dagenham situation just epitomised why you didn't need to coach him, because he'd just do things like that. I wouldn't have said, Clates, run up to this pen and dink it down the middle, it's last kick at game, because I'd have been petrified that he might miss, but he just strutted up to the ball and dinked it down the middle of the goal, which was, again, unbelievable occasion.
Don't know what you'd have said to him if a keeper had stayed still and got it, or maybe what John would have done. I mean, another player who played a massive part as well was Maz Kouyar, who sort of signed towards the end of the season. I was at that Hereford away game where he kind of dragged them back into that game, didn't he? Is that when he first came on your radar? And how did that signing come about? Because it all seemed to happen quite quickly, really. And
I think he'd been spoken about prior. I think Mitch Hancock's had spent a bit of time with Maz at Hereford, maybe. And he spoke about Maz and said to me and John, you know, he's at Hereford, he's a really good player. So we had a look at Maz. We'd been watching Maz for a little bit, and then when he played against us, he was excellent. So we'd already earmarked him before that game, and then after that game we spoke and said, you know, we really need to sign this kid. And obviously we managed to get it done, and Maz came in and completely changed who we were as a team at that point. He was really creative and created chances that we maybe wouldn't have been able to create if we'd not brought Maz in. But the biggest compliment I can give Maz is he worked unbelievably hard as well. He wasn't just a good footballer. Every training session, gave everything, was really fit, was really strong, and had a great mentality. So he just completely fitted in with everything that we wanted. So it was a great signing, and obviously is doing really well now and playing in League Two.
Yeah, incredible. And I suppose that, you know, it's good that he was like that as well, because you'd obviously worked really hard, you and John, to get the group cohesive, as it were. And then if you'd assigned someone who was maybe a bit of a big time Charlie or had an ego, that might have damaged all the work that you'd just done. And so for Maz to kind of come in and be exactly fit in the group was obviously really important, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he did have a little bit of an ego, Maz, but that's because he's a good player, and he should have had an ego, because as a football player, if you don't believe in yourself, then you know, you probably make it very difficult for yourself. So he did have an ego, but in the right way. And like I said, he worked really hard every session and every game. So he was a massive signing for us.
Yeah, as was Lenny. And, you know, it brings us on to the playoffs nicely, doesn't it? And that goal that Lenny got very early on against Chorley, where obviously keeper comes
quite a
fair way out of his goal, and it loops over him. I felt as a supporter like it took an absolute age to come down. But whenever I've spoken to Lenelli, he's always sort of said, no, I knew it was kind of in straight away. What were you thinking on the bench? And it was kind of lift-off, wasn't it, for the club?
Yeah. It was amazing moment. I was a bit gobsmacked as to why the goalkeeper was so far out.
Yeah.
But then obviously, as soon as Lenny lifted it, it was... I agree with Lenny. As soon as he lifted it over him, it was a goal. Obviously, it felt like it took forever to go in, but it was a really good moment for a massive player for us, huge player for us. Lenny made such a big difference to us.
Yeah, huge leader. And so when I felt like with the Chorley game, like you said, the crowd and everyone before kickoff, and it was like momentum was just with the club, wasn't it? How big is that momentum? And because people talk about momentum and confidence, how big is it for players?
It is massive. Mentally, I think you're just in a place when you're in that period where you are just winning games, and everybody is completely together. It almost takes thinking out of the equation. You're just turning up and playing. Whereas when things are a little bit more difficult, you overthink, you overanalyze. That can creep into your game where you are overthinking and you overcomplicate certain situations and there's elements of doubt. Whereas when you've got momentum like we had, it almost feels like you just turn up and everything just, you just do everything as you were, almost on autopilot, and the thinking's taken out of it. So you turn up to games like that, and I just felt the whole game we were just too strong for them. We were just too fit, we were too dynamic, and it was just almost like what we've done prior to this has led to this moment, and we're not going to be denied in this situation.
And there's one thing kind of doing that at the LNER where it's packed to the rafters, they're all there for York, but going to Brackley, where we'd kind of experienced defeat only a few weeks before, quite a comfortable defeat, I think, as well, from my memory. So talk me through the tactics for that game, and how did you kind of go there? There must have been a mental kind of thing there as well with Brackley, but they were very strong at home, were they? They had a pretty good record over York the whole time we're in that division. So how did you go there thinking, how are we going to turn this around from only a few weeks ago? What was it, because of a Chorley game and the momentum from that, or was it tactically, what was it?
I think Brackley were very good at what Brackley did. They were very strong, very organised, direct and powerful as a team. And we had to match that. We had to stand up and match their physicality. And if we didn't do that and we didn't win first balls, we didn't pick up second balls, inevitably they are just going to get on top of you and dominate the game. I think Lenny pulled his quad quite soon in that game, which was obviously a big problem for us because he was unbelievable. Pete saved the penalty, I think, was it just before half-time? Yeah. And up to that point, I thought we were struggling in the game a little bit. The game was suiting them. It was quite a scrappy game. I think when Pete saved that penalty, it completely shifted the game.
It felt like a goal, didn't it?
Yeah, it was massive. That was a massive moment in that game because they were very strong, they were very good. And like I said, we just needed to stand up to that more so than anything, because regardless of what we give in terms of tactical information, you inevitably do get into a battle at some point in any game. And if you're not capable of standing up to their physicality, teams like Brackley will just end up dragging you into that world and are so dominant at doing that that they just overawe teams. Whereas in this game, it just felt like we, at that moment when Pete had saved that, it just felt like we were going to be able to get through the game and manage the game. Because I don't think we particularly played brilliantly against Brackley, but to fight and find a way through a game like that was unbelievable.
Because you mentioned about standing up to that kind of direct and that physical kind of approach, which is kind of what not happened at Alfreton a few weeks before, when it losing 3-0. They were quite fit. I think their striker was
Matt Reid,
that's it, yeah. You know, and couldn't handle him. So were you concerned that could have sort of happened again, or do you think it was just the team were in a different moment then? And
I think we were in a different place. But even the Alfreton, Matt Reid's done that all his career. No one's ever looked at him and thought he's going to be an unbelievable footballer, but he's unbelievably effective. So effective. I think when he was at Lincoln, they went to Burnley and he probably bullied the centre-halves at Burnley as well, because they've never dealt with someone like him. He was really intelligent footballer, not just a big lump. He was smart with what he did. So the Alfreton game, Matt Reid can do that to anybody on any occasion. Brackley was a little bit different because they were big and strong, but dynamic as well. I think they had Leon Love central. They had Lowe, who was on one of the wings.
Jimmy Anderson as well. Yeah.
Jimmy was a superb footballer. Played against Jimmy for years. Great footballer. They had, you know, they were dynamic and strong and powerful. So it was different. And like I said, mentally, we just had to stand up to that. And unfortunately, we did.
Yeah. And then obviously to get the final to be at home was obviously a massive, massive thing, wasn't it? But it wasn't just that, was it? I felt like everything clicked at the right time. You know, like looking through the sort of players in that team, like Ollie Dyson playing right back, probably gave his best performances for the club in those playoff games. You know, Clayton, I think he's probably my favourite ever game he had in a Yorkshire was that playoff final. Yeah, you know, I thought it was unbelievable. You know, and he was playing out wide really, which isn't where he's played most of his career. But he worked so hard. He was just a colossus, really. Mitch Hancock's as well. Like, I don't think has really got to those heights again in his career, you know, but we saw probably the best of him. Pete Jameson, you mentioned there, saving the penalty. What a player he was. Yeah. Everything seemed to click, didn't it?
Yeah, again, when you get to a place as a group where, you know, you're grinding out wins, things are difficult and you're finding ways through them and it galvanises you as a group, you do get those little bits of luck that fall your way and things do fall into place. The Boston game was unbelievable. Like you said, the performance levels in that game were outstanding. Clates was unbelievable. He looked like a 21-year-old footballer who was just, you know, coming through. He was unbelievable. Led by example massively for us. I think everybody in that game just took it to another level for that season, really, for us. And I think probably as a, you know, manager, as a group of staff, I could only see us winning the game after about 30 minutes. We just looked so good and so strong that I just couldn't see a way that we were going to lose.
Yeah. It wasn't the best game in the world, was it, looking back? But it was such a controlled performance. It was such a dominant performance, wasn't it? And once Lenny scored quite early on, it was only edgy because of a scoreline rather than what was happening in the game. I mean, our emotions as supporters was obviously relief, I think. We'd been in that division for 5 years. So I wonder what it was like for you and, you know, and John, I suppose, as well. You'd only been at the club a matter of months, really. Your experience had been turning around the situation pretty quickly and galvanising them and having this momentum. So I imagine relief won't have been your overriding emotion. So what was it?
Probably pride. Pride in what we'd achieved as a group. I think it's probably... Not probably. I spoke to Goody the other day about it. You know, he had an unbelievable playing career and achieved amazing things, and I did okay and had some good achievements, but for me it was by far the best experience I've ever had in terms of football. It was amazing to see that as a group we'd turned things around and achieved something that was so meaningful to everybody.
And I suppose you'd experienced promotion with Port Vale, but you were in and out of the team, so you must have felt a huge part of this, what was happening at York.
Yeah, it's completely different experience when you're playing. When you're playing, your experiences are just solely your experiences, so it's just you. Although you're a part of a team and you're playing as a team, what happens is your individual, I've done this. Whereas when you're part of a group and part of staff, I'd not achieved that. You know, I didn't achieve promotion with York. The group had achieved promotion at York, and, you know, we'd managed to get the group to a point where they were able to go out and express themselves and do what they did as a group of players, as staff that were all together and all pulling in the same direction. So it is a completely different feeling to when you're playing and when you're a footballer. That feeling was that far surpasses anything that I ever felt as a footballer.
And I suppose the only dampener on the day was Scott Barrow's injury, wasn't it? Which was pretty horrific, and that must have been getting over the line for him as well, as much as anything else was important, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an awful situation for Scotty, because he come in and from day one, when we said, listen, Scott, we need you as quickly as possible, he said, I'll play whenever you want me to. I'm ready whenever you put me in, even though I think he'd been out for a little while and he was just coming back. And from the minute we put him in, he was brilliant for us. he was unbelievable. Did so well for us. So for it to end the way it did for him was, you know, devastating. And we had Ducky as well, who'd picked up a bad injury at Alfreton away, I think it was. Mm. So to get it over the line for those two and you know, make sure that they were looked after following that was the right thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. And let's move on to the summer then. So obviously a lot of change, York City moving up a division, but new owners. You'd mentioned about Jason McGill had come in the changing room, and obviously it was emotional, I imagine, probably because he knew it was his time at the club was coming to an end. So we obviously know what happens with Mr. Henderson, but what I wondered, what was your initial communication like with him, and what sort of budget were you and John given sort of at the start of that summer?
So I'll be honest, I never really got involved with anything to do with budget or any of those things. I just recommended players and was told what kind of figures we had for certain players, and if we were, you know, if we were chasing a player, this is what we can go to. The initial contact was a meeting at the ground. So we went and had the meeting at the ground, and we spoke about a few situations. Red flags were showing from that meeting. It was almost put out to press that me and John had been slagging previous owners and previous staff and all of those things, which wasn't what was said. It wasn't what happened in the conversation, which straight away... I didn't really like that something that we discussed as a group was then put out completely different.
Well, it's private conversation.
Yeah, it's private conversation, yeah. But not only a private conversation, but just it was put out as a different conversation to what we'd actually had. So that wasn't really a good start. And then when we went up to Scotland for pre-season, we went to Largs, and the chairman came and joined us up there. And it was just a couple of things that he was saying about certain players, and saying he wasn't sure on, you know, different players that we'd signed and all of these things, which I didn't like and I don't think is appropriate at that point.
Did you and John have conversations then at that point, like, oh, this is a bit strange?
Well, obviously I told John what he'd been saying to me during an 11v11 or something up in Scotland, that he were talking about certain players, which I disagreed with, and I voiced my opinion on that situation, and I disagreed with his opinions because I'd played with some of these players and I'd played against some of these players, and I'd like to think that playing against them and playing with them, I have a much better understanding than someone who maybe just watches from above and sees certain things that they don't like. So I spoke to John and said a couple of things that had been said. So it didn't have a great start. It didn't have a nice feeling. It felt like someone who wanted to be far more involved than he needed to be, which was polar opposite to Jason. Jason would come and see us every so often, would check in via phone calls, would ask us what we need, what do we want to do to improve, but wouldn't really try and offer too much of an opinion on players. It would just support us more so than anything. So it felt very different.
I mean, the start to the season was pretty incredible, really. I mean, walking on the opening day, obviously battered them, really. And at 2-0, yeah. I don't think represents the gulf between the two sides on the day. I remember being at Solihull Moors on the first, I think, away game.
Yeah.
They'd just been in the playoff final, I think, the previous season, and got to Wembley. And it was 1-1. I think there was only one team that was going to win that the longer that game was going on. Obviously, further on down the line, beating Barnet away 5-0, incredible result as well.
Yeah.
I think you guys were given new contracts around that time, which I suppose, given what you've said there, was, did it come as a bit of a surprise to you?
Yeah, bizarre.
Yeah. But was it one of those things that you were obviously both really happy at the club, so wanted to stay, but obviously had that. So I presume there was no hesitation to sign those contracts.
No, it was we were doing well. We were going in the right direction. We had a good start, like you said. As a team, we looked like we were improving. So, you know, we didn't want anything to change, really. We just wanted to continue doing what we were doing and continue to build and progress. So, yeah, it almost didn't match what was going on behind the scenes, really, but I think they probably felt that they had to do that in that situation because we were doing as well as what we were following the promotion.
Were you kind of hoping that, as you were kind of proving by the results at like Barnet away, that his involvement might got less and less because he might recognise that actual fact these guys know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Was there a bit of that kind of like hoping that the situation would almost resolve itself?
It was just us controlling what we could. It was just us saying we're just going to deal with what we can deal with and everything else is just in the back. So we were just continuing to do what we'd done the previous season, continuing to add to that. And I think you could see that in performances. So we were almost trying to ignore what was happening elsewhere and just sticking to what we were doing.
And I mean, there was a dip in form, but probably inevitable for a side that's just come up from a National League North. I don't think there's many teams that have come up and are right up there. And I think John was sacked, at, you know, 12th, I think the club were after 19 games, which I think was a pretty reasonable start from my perspective. Did you guys see it coming? I mean, you mentioned there about the stuff in the background, but then you've been given new contracts. So what was the situation like for you guys when it kind of happened?
I think John saw it coming more so than me, really. I just didn't think they would be able to. I just couldn't see a way in which it was justified that he was going to be sacked when we were in such a good position as a club. You know, after just getting promoted, we were 12th, but some of the performances and some of the games where we drew and didn't pick up as many points as we could have, we were unbelievable. Chesterfield at home, we were incredible, and we were playing against one of the best teams the National League's seen in Chesterfield. They were amazing team, and we should have won that game. You know, late on in the game, I think Manny Duku hit one from about 35 yards that the keeper somehow managed to pull out the top corner. So I just couldn't see a way that would come, because, like I said, performances and results really up until that point didn't show any sign of that being the outcome.
Yeah, what was the aim before a ball was kicked? Because I sort of think if a club had come 12th, I think most supporters would have
again
would have taken
us,
that before,
just,
you know,
finish as high as we can.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone ever came to us and said, "This is what we expect."
Yeah,
I think the club were happy at the job we'd done, and our aim was to finish as high as we possibly could. You know, we were ambitious. We didn't want to just survive in the league. We wanted to go and compete against these teams. Otherwise, we would have set up against Chesterfield and just tried to camp in and hope that we could nick a win on the break. But we didn't want to do that. We wanted to continue doing what we'd done the previous season and take that to another level. So when we did lose some of these games, it's because we were going to win the game. We weren't trying to set up and just avoid defeat against anybody. We were going to everyone's backyard and trying to win games of football by being attacking. And sometimes that, you know, worked, like Barnet, and sometimes it maybe didn't. But we were ambitious and wanted to finish as high as we could.
I think the last game was the last game, Altrincham away, which again, you could see that in that game. You know, it could have gone either way.
We had good opportunities and good chances to comfortably control that game. We did.
But do you think, looking back, he was looking for that sort of defeat to then
It must have been. Mm. But again, if you analyse that game individually, if that was the game that was the deciding factor, if you actually look at the game properly, I don't think it was a performance that warranted removing a manager who'd done unbelievably well for the club.
Yeah.
So it was just a weird situation.
And John, I remember sort of never seen this with another manager before who's been sacked by Oxy, but he's quite visibly upset, actually, by how he was treated, you know, with the kind of going to the office and having to wait for his letter to be printed out. And I remember him being quite emotional with his interview with Radio York at the time. I mean, I wonder how that made kind of you feel, as someone who's worked with him very closely, played for him.
Yeah.
It must have been difficult for you to see that happening to someone that you got a lot of respect for, clearly.
It was a horrendous, horrendous way of dealing with things. For someone who's had an unbelievable playing career, unbelievable managerial career, to do it as disrespectfully as they did was unbelievable. It was devastating, really, for John, for that to happen in that kind of situation, because he's a proud person, and I think for them to just do that in the manner that they did was really hurtful for him and for us, really. Mm. I think I've never seen a group of people react how the players, the staff, everybody around that situation reacted. You know, the fans' reaction. I don't think one person at that point wanted that situation. But then for it to end like it did, in the manner in which it did, it was horrendous day, horrendous feeling.
Yeah, and I think you were offered to kind of step in as interim. Mm-hmm. You walked away out of loyalty, yeah. Which I think was very admirable. Was that always going to be the case?
That was so. John called me and Goody. We were just driving to the training ground for a normal day. He called us and told us the situation. And then when I got there, the chairman was in the car park waiting for me. And I got out and he tried to speak to me and ask me if I would, you know, stay on until the new people came in. And, he wanted me at the club for the foreseeable, and he saw me at the club for in the future. But I just made it very clear that after today, you'll not see me ever again, and I'll never ever work for somebody who can do that to someone who's such a respectful person and such a good person. So yeah, it wasn't even a question of whether I'll stay on and help out until someone comes in. It was just the right thing to do in that situation. I wouldn't have been able to go home and look at my wife and kids. I know it sounds dramatic, but I wouldn't have been able to look at them and feel like any kind of decent, honourable person if I hadn't have done what I did.
Yeah, very respectful. And the David Webb appointment after you guys sort of moved on, what was it like seeing the club slide down the table? Because obviously, I imagine on one hand, there's a bit of vindication there that mm-hmm. actual fact that wouldn't have happened under you and John Bean there, but I suppose on the other side there's a lot of players there that you've become very close yeah. to and done a lot of work with. It must have been a mixture of emotions, really.
Very difficult situation. Very difficult. It took me a while to get over the whole situation, really. It was very hurtful because it wasn't just a commitment from myself during that period at the club. It was a massive commitment for my family, you know, my wife. We had two really young children, so it was a big commitment for all of us. So it was a very, very difficult situation. But then to see the club in that position again, it wasn't a nice feeling, regardless of whether we were there or not. We really didn't want to see him go down and get relegated, because it had been such a...
We'd have undone your legacy, I suppose,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
It had been such such an amazing period for the club, getting promoted and doing what we did, to then just plummet and for that to happen, realistically, because of one person's opinion on someone as a person, because it can't have been to do with, you know, how we're performing as management, as staff. So one person's opinion of a person to have that kind of impact on the club would have been devastating.
Yeah, and since leaving York, obviously John's had a few different jobs on Hartlepool. Yeah. Truro. I think I know the answer to this, given your answers kind of earlier, but I wondered if you had discussions about working together again. You're obviously a massive family man, so going to Truro is probably a little bit harder to have a conversation with the wife about, but have you had conversations with John? Are you open to kind of, you know, you seem very happy with your lot in football, but is there a never kind of say never in the future?
I was offered the assistant's job at Hartlepool with John, which was very, very difficult for me to turn down. I looked at every single way that we could possibly make it work, but it was just too far. It was too far to make it work. And like I said, we had a young family, so it just didn't feel right that, you know, my wife has probably spent a big period with me being very selfish as a footballer, which you have to be. Everything has to be around, you know, what you're eating, how you're living, and what you're doing as a footballer. So I just, at that moment, I just had to make the right decision for us as a family, so we could spend as much time together as we possibly could. I still speak to John now. I still speak to him regularly. I still check his results wherever he is. If something was available that was the right thing in the right location, I would always be open to, you know, working with John again, always, because we had such a great experience. But it would just have to be the right fit, which obviously York was perfect. It was close to home, and so yeah, I would definitely be open to working with him again. But it would obviously have to be in the right situation. Truro is a beautiful part of the world, yeah, but a long way from home, as you say.
And I kind of wondered whether you kind of have envy of managers that have since worked under Matt Ugler, who obviously is York City's current owner. Totally different to character, personality, kind of what he's done for the club as well to, compared to Glenn Henderson. I wonder what your kind of thoughts are of kind of what might have been for you and John maybe working under Matt.
And I never really look at what could have been for us if we'd have had. I think we had a really good chairman. I know he had his faults, and you know people can have their own opinions. But I personally, my experience with Jason was a great experience. I thought he was someone who seemingly did love the club and wanted the club to do well, as he showed when he addressed the players and addressed us before the Chorley game. I think it meant everything to him that he could come back to a game and be at games and taking the club in a successful path. So our experience with Jason was amazing, but to see the kind of progression at the level that they're at now and how they've been supported is amazing to see, and it is what York should be getting. York should be pushing for promotion to the Football League. So, you know, they've got a great manager in place now and good staff. I know Gary, and they're doing an amazing job. I think it's such a shame that, you know, there's only two clubs that are going up to the Football League when there's four that go up to League One. It blows my mind that's still okay. You know, York could run all the way to the final day again and push for the title again and not get promoted to the Football League, which just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. And like Bromley are showing, National League clubs can go to League Two and then continue their progression, because Bromley are doing an unbelievable job this year. So I just hope that, you know, they get everything that they deserve, because the chairman and the club are doing everything that they can to push it in the right direction.
And have you been back to LNER since you left? Is it difficult to...
I haven't. I do need to. I do need to, and I keep saying I want to. And me and Goody are like, right, when should we get some tickets and go and watch? So I am going to do that in the near future and get down to a few games, because I would love to come back and just be around on a few match days and see them progressing, and hopefully see some of the people like Fallers and people like that who were there when we were there and see them progressing and hopefully getting the rewards.
And what's life like for you now? You mentioned earlier about your coaching school, so that, I presume that's still going strong. Are you?
Yeah.
What's life like for you at the minute?
It's amazing. I have an amazing work-life balance, which is what I wanted when I finished playing. So we have a football academy down in Wakefield and Rotherham. So we provide football sessions for over 500 kids on a weekly basis in those areas, which is the most rewarding thing about my journey in football, that I can continue to help kids learn about football and different things through life in a good environment. So that's what I do full time now. And then I go out running a lot. I run probably 50 to 60 kilometres every week. I did an ultramarathon last year, I think, or the year before, to raise money for defibrillators in Wakefield. So I've took up a lot of running. I go climbing in York, actually, Red Goat. I don't know if you've been before. Unbelievable climbing, unbelievable pizzas. So I spend quite a bit of time there as well. So yeah, I'm just enjoying time with my family and out walking with my dog and out running with my dog. So
well, I've really enjoyed this conversation. It's been fascinating to hear you, and you know, so refreshingly honest. And just thank you really for you and John's kind of part in York City's journey, because I think without that promotion to National League, maybe, you know, the Eagles might not have taken over the club and the club might not be where they are now. So without doubt, you've you know, contributed to that part of York City's history. So thank you, and I hope you've enjoyed going over your memories.
Yeah, it's been great. Fingers crossed that they can, you know, have a big push towards the end of the season and get back to the Football League. Yeah. It'd be amazing to see York City back in the Football League. So fingers crossed, and thank you for having me.
Oh, pleasure. So thank you for listening. This is an early release of what hopefully will be a brand new series of York Hospital Ball. Decided to release it early just because I felt that the kind of content and stories that Kingsley was talking about, being a promotion winning team, I thought was probably more poignant releasing it towards the end of his current season, where York City are hopefully going to
achieve promotion back to the Football League. So yeah, that was the reasoning behind it. So hopefully it whets the appetite for a new series to follow in the summer. Just want to also say a massive thank you to everyone who donated to York Hospital Radio last time after the 100th episode with Dipper Arkiniemi. We raised so much money for Hospital Radio. I think it was about £600 in the end. And yeah, we managed to give away two signed shirts that Dipper had worn the previous season. Hopefully going to do something similar in the summer as well with Mark Kitchen's match-worn shirts as well. So stay tuned for that. So in terms of other kind of calls to action, so again, if you enjoy these podcasts, you're wanting to donate to us, we are a charity. We provide a service to patients in York Hospital. It's justgiving.com/YorkHospitalRadio. Appreciate it's not always easy to kind of donate, and certainly not after every episode. So other ways you can help us, please do give us ratings if you're listening on Spotify. 5 stars would be really helpful to the cause. I think we're about 80 five-star reviews, so if we can get towards 100, that would be fantastic. If you're listening on Apple, reviews are always really, really helpful as well. We've not had one of those for a couple of years, so if you're willing to kind of take the time and write a review, again, it helps with the algorithms and all that sort of stuff. And subscribe if you haven't already. I mean, Hospital Ball is at the point now where I can't always do back-to-back series just because I've interviewed that many people now that it's always getting harder and harder to get former York City players to come on. But I'll as long as people keep listening, I will keep trying. And like I say, at the minute I've got a couple kind of lined up that will hopefully flesh out into another series. So subscribing is probably the best way for you to find out when episodes kind of drop. And just finally, just pointing you to a couple of other podcasts that I'm involved in. There's a spin-off of York Hospital Ball, which is called The Crux of It. I'm sure many of you know about that already now. We're a kind of panel show reviewing York City games and kind of discussion points. We've got a few quizzes on there as well. We've got a fantastic panel of diehard York City fans, including Michael Miles of Wirefront Fanzine, Ben Robinson, Dave Hughes, and Steve Ovenden, also known as Yorkie the Lion. On that feed as well, which you can find by just searching for The Crux of It on Spotify and Apple, you'll also find kind of live shows from the York City Supporters Trust social events, which I've got the privilege of hosting. And another podcast I'm sort of involved in as well is York Hospital Radio Meet. So they are various people from York Hospital Radio who interview people from all walks of life. Previously, I've interviewed people like Rick Whitter, lead singer of Shed 7, David Lloyd, the cricketer, and there's going to be a couple of football ones coming up shortly. So again, if you like Hospital Ball, kind of like the style of interviews that I do, then you'll enjoy these interviews that are coming up. So thanks again for listening, and like I say, hopefully there'll be a full series to follow in the summer.